This is the CSIS Global Health Interview Series at www.smartglobalhealth.org.
I have the pleasure of being joined today by Kay Warren, co-founder with her husband, Pastor Rick Warren of Saddleback Church in California. Kay and Rick founded Saddleback in 1980, and in 2002, Kay founded the church's HIV/AIDS initiative. Since then, she has played a prominent role in global AIDS efforts and has been a commentator on the role of the American faith community in global health. Kay, we're so delighted you could join us today.
Thank you so much. It's a privilege.
Kay, you've made the argument that the American faith community occupies a special space in global health efforts, particularly in HIV/AIDS, and that the American faith community brings to the table certain assets and contributions that other partners can't bring. In your eyes, what is the role of the faith community?
Well, the faith community does have distinctives that are different than what a government or an NGO or a philanthropic organization. First of all, the church has the largest volunteer base. The church has about 2.3 billion people on the planet who claim to be followers of Jesus Christ. Well, that's about a third of the global population. If those volunteers could be mobilized to care for people who are HIV positive, for orphans, for vulnerable children, we could make a serious dent in not only HIV and AIDS, but in a lot of other global issues as well. So the church brings volunteers in massive numbers. The church is widely distributed all over the planet. You could say it's got the most franchises, you know, more than all the McDonald's and Starbucks and Walmart's put together. There are churches, there are faith communities in every place on the planet. Even the most remote, the most isolated place, somehow you will find some sort of a faith community. So it is an existing distribution channel. When we talk in HIV, one of the questions that always comes up is, maybe we've got treatment, or maybe we've got information, maybe we have something that we want people to access. How do we get it to them? And the fact that the faith community is already in almost every community around the world says to me there's an existing distribution channel that could be utilized in a powerful way. So volunteers, this distribution channel, the fact that there's stability. You can't talk about this without talking about how funds come and go. Will PEPFAR be reauthorized to the money that we'd like? Would the global fund have all the money that it needs? Will this philanthropic agency give as much as they did last year? Because there may be a regime change in a country. So there's all this instability around funding toward HIV, but the faith community remains stable. It is an island of stability in the middle of incredible global change, country change, political change. And so the church is going to be there long after a grant runs out, long after an NGO pulls out and moves to another area. The church will remain stable. That's an advantage that it brings. And then probably the hardest to measure but the most profound is that the motivation for caring for people with HIV is different for those who are followers of Christ or the church. It's a motivation of love. It's, I'm doing this because you are my brother, you are my sister, as opposed to it's good foreign policy, as opposed to just to raise the level of health care in a country. It goes to the deepest part of why we care for people, and it's love. So those are some distinctives that the faith community can bring to this fight.
Let's talk for a minute about an issue that I know is very dear to your heart, which is orphans and vulnerable children. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, OVCs, right, as the
right.
Shorthand is,
the cold,
in the policy world.
Yeah, generic world, words used, yeah.
But orphans are a part of many governmental and non-governmental strategies around HIV. But I know for you, you feel like it's been an undervalued part of policy discussions. And I want to ask you, you know, why do you think that's the case? And what would you like to see be done differently?
Well, it's really a travesty. We're treating children the same way that we used to treat adults in HIV, which was, where is the treatment? There didn't used to be treatment for adults. There still is such a lack of treatment for children. We wouldn't, in America, we wouldn't say to a mother who has a child with a fever, well, cut an adult Tylenol in half and give it to your child. We wouldn't do that. That's too imprecise. It wasn't formulated for a child. But we do that with HIV. We use adult formulations for children. We don't have good treatment. They're underdiagnosed. They're not treated properly. They still die. They are the most vulnerable. When we talk about vulnerable populations, there is no one more vulnerable than a child. And the children should receive the highest priority of care, of treatment, of support. The highest research should be going towards children because they are the most vulnerable. In America, if we had any disease that the child had this particular disease, that there was 100% mortality by the time they were 5 years old, as there is in Rwanda, for instance, if a child lives an untreated HIV-positive child, there's 100% mortality by the age of five. Well, we would be screaming in the streets. We would have demonstrations. We would be saying all of our health care funding, all of our resources must be reallocated to this disease that is killing every child who gets it by the time they're 5 years old. Why is it in HIV that that it's different? Why do the little ones get left behind? Why are they the ones who are the least focus of our research dollar, of our efforts, of our energy? Our passions and our zeal have gone towards the adults. And, of course, I want everybody who's HIV positive to receive treatment. But the most vulnerable amongst us should receive the top priority in our dollars, our research, our funding, our efforts to find a way to make this disease go away, to come to an end.
So I know this is one of the issues that you'll be taking to the International AIDS Conference, which of course is returning to the United States for the first time after 22 years of leaving U.S. soil. So it's a big moment for the conference. It's a big moment for the United States. Why is the return of the conference important, particularly to the people within your church community? And what does it mean for the American public that the conference is returning? And how do you engage the public? Because I know that you have some interesting strategies at hand.
Well, sadly, I don't think the American public gives 2 cents that the International AIDS Conference is coming back to U.S. soil. For me as an advocate, it's thrilling. I'm just so excited to know, because I feel like the U.S. dollars, the U.S. people have invested billions in global health, particularly around HIV. And so for it to come back to our soil after 22 years, it's really thrilling to me. But I don't think that those in my community or my neighborhood, I don't think lawmakers, I don't think very many people in the United States will pay much attention to it unless they happen to catch a newscast of an activist protest that's, you know, protesting something of significance. But I would love to be able to change that so that my neighbors, so that the people in my church, the people in my community are actually excited to know that this scientific and phenomenal conference is coming to U.S. soil. We're trying to rally churches here in the D.C. area to not only attend, but to fly the red ribbon during the week as a show of support. I mean, many people will support World AIDS Day, and they'll wear the red ribbon, or they'll fly the White House flies the red ribbon on World AIDS Day. But what if churches? What if 100 churches in this area? Everywhere you looked, there was the red ribbon, and it wasn't just on government buildings. It wasn't just in news reports. But what if the faith community really said, this is something we care about? We are completely convinced that God cares for people who are HIV positive. We're also completely convinced that this crisis will not be solved without the faith community, what the faith community brings to the fight. And so this is an opportunity for Americans, for the American faith community in particular, the place that I have influence, to be able to say, we care. We're here. This is not just something that, it's not just about a conference. It's about people whose lives have been affected by a deadly virus. And we need to show up strong in support of them and in behalf of them receiving treatment, in support of the orphans and vulnerable children that are the most affected. And it's really a moment for us to look at the world and say, we are doing for you what we would like you to do to us. This is truly a moment to be a neighbor. So July 22 to 27 is a day marked in big letters on my calendar.
Kay, thank you so much for joining us. Interested listeners can hear more from Kay Warren by going to www.smartglobalhealth.org. There you can find the full audio and video of a CSIS event called the American Faith Community's Contributions to Global Health. Thank you.